Well, good morning, everyone. It is a great day. Great day for a variety of very obvious reasons. It's great to be alive. It's great to be able to come and assemble together. We're grateful for everyone's presence, grateful for our visitors. We're happy because it's a new year. Every day is the start of a new year, but there's something exciting about tearing the page off December and starting a new calendar year. Now, it's good for other reasons too. For our visitors, you may not know that for about the last 15, almost 16 months, we've been without a full-time preacher. So there's been a parade of men of the congregation who come up here and presented some lessons. And I happen to be the last one. Our new preacher will be here in the middle of the week, so I take no offense if you consider me the bottom of the barrel or the dregs, whatever, but I will say that I have really enjoyed and appreciated all the different men who've gotten up here, the variety of topics, the variety of styles. It's all been very educational and edifying. And with those words, I would like to say that I hope what I say here today, first of all, I'll try to make sure it's extracted from the scripture. Please make sure that it is exact according to the scripture. I hope that it will be edifying to you. It will build you up spiritually. It will be educational. And last but not least, I hope it'll be entertaining. Now, a few weeks ago, and I'm sorry he's not here this morning. I hope he's doing well. I hope he's watching on the TV or streaming. But Ray Comies had talked about that we were in the counting stages, counting down to the end of the year and counting until our new full-time preacher would be here. And if you know Ray, a few weeks before that, by his own admission, so I'm not saying anything behind his back, but by his own admission, he alluded to put it nicely, his lack of prowess with arithmetic. And so when he said that we were counting down, I thought, well, there's two ideas that don't go together, counting and Ray. But I wish he were here because, and I hope he's watching, because my lesson today has a lot to do with numbers. In fact, I just gave it a numerical title. I call it 153. And some of you may say, oh, I know where he got that. Well, that's good. I'm glad you know that. And there may be others who say, I've seen that somewhere before. And that also is good. There's a little bit of familiarity there. And then there are some others who say, 153, well, that's an odd number. And I say, correct and good, because it is an odd number in that it's not even, but it's a peculiar number. And because of that number and the context that it comes from, a lot of people have tried to attach a lot of significance to that number. And I'll spend a lot of time talking about that today, but most of you know that I like to title my lessons with an alliterative title. So to quote that wise philosopher and poet, Britney Spears, whoops, I did it again. So if you need a secondary title, I'm going to call this The Miracle, the Math, and Mind the Gap, as they say in London. Now, if you need something else, and I have a lot of information to add here. I don't want you to lose out on the point that I'm trying to make. So, like every good essay, I'll state my thesis right up front. And that would be that we need to test the spirits. And that as Christians, as believers, our source of truth is God's Word. So we must learn to apply scriptural discernment to test everything we see, we hear, and what we read. Now, where does this 153 come from? Let me satisfy your curiosity if you don't know. But a few weeks ago, in our study of the miracles of Jesus, we talked about, in the last chapter of John, a miraculous catch of fish. Now, there had been another miracle that occurred some time before, another miraculous catch of fish. But this is one of the last miracles performed by Jesus. And I'm not going to go through all the details of this miracle and what we studied and what it means. But I do want to give you a quick synopsis of what this was all about. The disciples, this is after Jesus had been crucified, and they had already met him. But they had been dispatched or given instructions to go to Galilee and wait for further instructions. And they had been up there at the Sea of Galilee. And whether they were despondent, whether they were wondering, what do we do now? What's going to happen? They were sitting around. And Peter, now remind you, these folks were fishermen by trade. Peter says, I'm going fishing. So they go out fishing. They were professional fishermen, but as happens with fishermen sometimes, they had fished all night and they had been skunked. They had not caught a thing, which there is a difference between fishing and catching, mind you. So in the early morning, Jesus, they didn't recognize him because it's early morning, dim light, and they were about 200 cubits offshore, or about 100 yards, 300 feet. So they could not recognize him, but Jesus appears at the shore, and he yells to them and tells them, cast your net over the right side of the boat. So they did. They cast the net over the right side of the boat, and lo and behold, they caught so many fish that they couldn't haul it in. Whoop, let me back up here just a second. We'll touch it this morning. So at this point, John recognizes, I've seen this movie before. Hey, it's Jesus. He tells Peter, it's the Lord. So Peter is all excited. He jumps off the boat. He swims, wades back to shore to greet Jesus. The others get back with the boat. They try to, they have difficulty bringing the net in. There were so many fish that they all had to struggle to bring it in, but it didn't tear the net. Unlike the previous miraculous catch of fish, it broke the net. But this time it didn't break the net. And they counted up the fish, and lo and behold, how many do you think were there? 153. Now, if you read the story, it seems like an insignificant little factoid, a little bit of trivia right in there. But trust me, so many people have tried to attach so much important significance to this little detail. Why is it 153? It is. It's peculiar. It's odd. It could have said, oh, six score fish or something like that, or he could round it off and said over 100 fish, or like they said, just a multitude of fish. But this seems to be like an exact number. So there must be something to it, right? Well, here you go. We get into the myth and the mystique of that number. People do some research and you say, well, you know, Solomon, when he was building the temple, he got 153,000, we'll add a few more zeros on there, 153,000 to build the temple. Well, that's pretty close, but the total was actually 153,600. He had people who were carriers, he had people who quarried, cut the stone, and then, like all good government jobs, he had people who need to supervise and oversee. But it's pretty close. 153 is in there somewhere. Long about the 4th century, there was a Catholic priest and a theologian. And he theorized that the number 153 fishes in the story represented every species of fish there was. Well, he's about as good a marine biologist as George Costanza in the Seinfeld episode, because he wasn't even close. There's few more than 153 species of fish. There's over 34,000 different species of fish, depending on which sources and how they count them, what they consider a fish. Well, there's more to it. There are a lot of people who spend a lot of time trying to find and decipher what they call little biblical codes. They will take the Hebrew and they will assign certain numbers to words and how they appear here and whatever. It's all very mind-numbing, and if you got the time and you got the patience, you got the temperance to dig into that, be my guest, because I got lost after a while. But in Ezekiel's given an account of something, and these folks have come up that there is a coded numeric relationship between the number 153 and certain Dead Sea locations that are mentioned in the book of Ezekiel. Well, my argument to that is that God has revealed these mysteries. I don't think God is in the mystery writing business. We'll leave that to Dan Brown, but this is all Da Vinci Code kind of stuff. But God has revealed the mystery of salvation to us, and he's not having us hunt down and look for special little codes in the Bible that brings us to salvation. Now, another thing we see, here's one. There were 153 individual blessings in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. 48, I could have listed them all here, but there are 48 separate incidents where individual people receive blessings. Now, they had to stretch this a little bit because, okay, we'll discount all those feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000 and this and that and the other. But if you add them up, there's 153. Well, the problem I have with that is, you know, in John, he said that Christ performed many other signs and wonders. So there's a lot more than 153 individual blessings or miracles within the Bible. Just not all of them are listed. So the 153 blessings, there is no connection there. There's nothing special about that number as it pertains to our salvation. Now there is, we get into the math part here, and I hope your eyes don't start to glaze over. I'm not going to go into depth too much about this, but I found this interesting. And I'm no math whiz either. But 153 does have certain mystical and magical properties in a mathematic sort of speaking, way of speaking. It has some peculiar properties. First of all, it is a triangular number. And there's a nice graphic representation of what I'm talking about. You can take all the numbers, consecutive numbers, 1 through 17. You can add them up. You come to 153, and you can arrange them like bowling pins or like pool balls, and they'll fit into a nice equilateral triangle, equal sides, all 17 on all sides there. And there are triangles, equilateral triangles, within that triangle. So that's pretty neat, kind of cool to look at there. Well, there are a lot of triangle numbers, but there are fewer hexagonal numbers, ones that can be arranged with six sides, and fewer yet that fit into this. And I'll explain these in a moment. It's a narcissistic number, and it's a Friedman number. These are new terms to me also, but I just thought it's cool. Okay, that bottom there, you can see the representation of the six-sided or the hexagonal number, and it goes up. There are certain ones, and 153 falls within that category. Now, what do we talk about with the narcissistic numbers? Well, I don't know if you can read the definition, but I'll explain it to you. You can take the number of digits there are and take those individual digits within that number and raise them to that particular power, and it'll come to that number. So you take 153, there are three digits there, so you raise each one to the third power, and you do that all that math and add it up, and guess what? Lo and behold, it comes to 153. And it works with other numbers, four-digit numbers on up and everything. A lot of people have more time on their hands than I do, I guess. I don't know, and here's another category. It's a Friedman number, meaning that you can take the numbers 153, or some of the other numbers, you can rearrange them and apply some basic arithmetic functions or operations to them. By basic, I mean adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, and you can come up with the same number. So 153, if I take those numbers, 3 times 51, that's equal to 151. Now, the people have tried to look into Chronicles, wrote it down and kind of like Ken, forget the verse and everything. But there were three groups of 50 men and their leaders. And so that's 51 times 3. That's 151. There's another reference in the Bible to 153. So there's got to be something to this number 153, right? Oh, here's more. Now, this even predates the time of Christ, but Euclid and Archimedes, they were trying to, they did some work with this, and they were trying to determine how, what's a good formula for finding out the circumference of a circle. And this all goes back into their 3.14 deductions and everything. But if you see where those two circles intersect there, a lot of us know that as a Venn diagram. But that little green area there in the diagram, that's referred to as the vesica piscis, or the bladder of the fish, because I guess that's what it's supposed to look at. Some look like some other languages refer to it as an almond. But they did all this calculation. They were able to figure out the height, the width ratio, and it's about the square root of 3, which, guess what? It's not exact, but it's pretty close. That's 265 divided by what? 153. There's that number again. There's got to be something to it. And again, like I said, this was a few centuries before the time of Jesus. So this was, I wouldn't say common knowledge, but it was out there. But take a look again at this diagram. Does anything look familiar to you there? Maybe if I take out some of the other stuff, and this just adds a little bit more, well, to some people, credibility that there's something, I don't know, religious, divine associated with this. Oh, looks a lot like the ichthys, doesn't it? Which was adopted, and you see it on cars all the time or other things, but that symbol is supposed to symbolize Christianity or a fish. So there's that connection, or some would say, between Christianity and number 153 again. All right. But 153 is not the only thing, not the only numbers that people attach some significance to. We all have our lucky numbers, and if I say, bring up the number 7, say, oh, you think that. We've been imprinted like that. We've been accustomed and groomed, I guess you could say, to know that 7's a lucky number, at least in our country. You go over to China, and the number 8 is a lucky number because the way that 8 is pronounced, it sounds very similar to their word for fortune. So 8 is their lucky number. But we have unlucky numbers too. What's the most common one? 13. Okay, you see 13, and admit it, folks, you think, okay, that's an unlucky number. Or you see on the calendar, like we had in November, we had a Friday the 13th. And a lot of people put serious stock in that stuff, but we know that's all foolishness, right? Well, in China, again, the number 4 is unlucky because 4 sounds like their word for death. And I will tell you, if you've been to Korea, I know there are certain hotels over there, they don't have a 4th floor because that's unlucky. It sounds like death. Okay. Oh, in Italy, here's one. The number 17 is considered unlucky because in Roman numerals, 17 is written as XVII, which if you change those around, you get Vixi, which means I have lived, or in other words, my life is over. So 17 is an unlucky number. What about evil numbers? Which one comes to mind to you there? Ooh, back up. All right, 666, right? Everybody knows. They haven't read the book of Revelation, but they know that 666, that's the mark of the beast. Oh, and by the way, which chapter is 666? Which reference? Where is that referenced in the book of Revelation? Chapter 13. Tell me not, there's not something there? I don't know. Of course I'm being having a little fun with that. But I don't know if you remember, some of us are old enough to remember the 70s. And I actually worked with a guy. And this is when the barcodes first came out. And the church that he went to, or the denomination that he went to, had them convinced that this was going to be the mark of the beast, this new barcode technology, that they were going to tattoo everybody with on their forehead and their forearm, you know, with this barcode. That was the mark of the beast. And I like this little saying by the developers, nothing, no more connection to it than the fact that my name, first, middle, and last name, each has six letters. That's kind of spooky, 666 there. But anyway, last I saw this guy, I think I ran into him at the grocery store. He was in the self-check line, scanning his own items out. So we see how that worked out for him. Okay. But people, here you go. When the Reagans, when their term of office, his term of office was up, they moved back to Bel Air and bought a house. And what was the street address? 666. Well, Nancy's not going to have that. You know, she consulted astrologers. So they had it changed to 668 because of a little satanic connection there. All right, here's one, just for your amusement now. I've taken the alphabet, and I've started numbering each letter consecutively, starting with 100 and getting all the way up to Z, 125. Yes, I know there's 26 letters in the alphabet, but we started with a zero, 100 there. So let's take some names and see how they add up here. Okay, my name. If I take the letters and add them up, I score 539. Okay, Earl's not here, but Elaine, you got a new nickname for him. You can call Earl old 432 there, okay? And Ray's not here. He's got a short name. That's why I used it. Ray's 341. And I'm using some last names. I didn't want to go with Harrington because that's just too much addition right there. But I thought we got Phil Mullins coming in, so let's see how he ranks. We got Mullins at 793. That's pretty good. Of course, it's a longer name. What about some historical names? Maybe Hitler? How does he rank? Oh, no, Hitler's 666 right there. There you go. Do you need any more proof, folks, that he was the Antichrist? He had the mark of the beast? Of course. This is all silly. But you know, numbers aren't the only thing that we attach a lot of importance to spiritually, and we kind of get misled by. I recall reading in a Popular Mechanics years ago, a guy wrote a letter to the editor. He had an old aunt who was convinced that nothing good ever came about because of cars. There was moonshiners, there were gangsters, that sort of thing, and cars were a product of the devil. And she would not be caught dead in a car. Well, guess how she got to the graveyard? Okay. Now, we all think this is funny, and it is. It's all fun and games for a while until people start buying into it and not thinking about what the consequences are. And in a lot of cases, there are some very, very serious consequences to all this when we don't test the spirits, when we don't challenge teachings, when we just blindly buy into things. A lot of us with a little bit more silver on top remember this character, Jim Jones, in Jonestown in Guyana, in the People's Temple. And there's the result there. Over 900 people were convinced to drink poison to kill themselves. Well, that's not the only incident. A few years later, remember this guy? David Koresh in the Branch Davidians. He had over 80 of his followers die in that conflagration. And then a few years later, we get this, excuse my terminology, nutcase, but the Heaven's Gate, where he had convinced, you know, there's this comet out there, at that time, the Hale-Bopp comet, and there is a satellite. You can read about this stuff if you're not familiar with it. But there is a spaceship tailing this comet on the other side, and we need to go meet it. And the only thing, we can't do it in this body. So he convinced like 39 of his followers to ceremonially commit suicide. They're all dressed the same, all covered the same, that sort of thing. So you see, blindly following this type of doctrine or these teachings can have some serious consequences, not just to our bodies, not just to this mortal shell, but to our souls. You know, I like something that Les alluded to a few weeks ago. We've had all these ages. We refer to them as ages throughout history, the Bronze Age, the Stone Age, the Iron Age, Age of Enlightenment. And he said, I wish we had an age of truth. Boy, so do I. We live in what's known as the information age because we've got access to so much data and we can send it out around the world instantaneously. That's good when it's used for good purposes. But a lot of times it's used for evil purposes. And unfortunately, we also live in a misinformation age. And this misinformation age has been around since the beginning of time. It started with Adam and Eve. What did the serpent tell Eve? Thou shalt not surely die. And he convinced her to eat of the forbidden fruit. In Deuteronomy, they were warned. You know, you'll have these folks come to you with certain signs and things like that. And they will tell you, let's go after other gods. Don't listen to them. They're spreading misinformation. Even Isaiah said that there would be people, some versions refer to it as them as mediums. Some of them refer to it as necromancers, but they talk with the dead. Don't listen to them. Don't be convinced by those. I don't know how many of you get the Asheville Citizen Times, but yesterday there's a column in there by John Boyle. It's called The Answer Man, where people will write in and I ask him certain things and he'll research it. And well, he's been on vacation, so they were redoing some from several years back. But there's one interesting one yesterday. Somebody wrote in, and how could they find a good medium? They had a relative or an acquaintance who had passed away, and they wanted to get in touch with them. So how could they find out or get some references to find a reputable medium? I thought, you know what? That's a job I'd like to have. Who's going to doubt me? Can you contact my contacts, my references? You have to take my word for it. Yeah, I talked to old William Tecumseh Sherman, and he said this. Who's going to doubt it? So how do you check up on those things? How do you know if someone is a reputable medium? And with this information age, we're told that we have now alternative facts. Well, you might have alternative opinions, but there are only facts, and there are facts. Or we're lied to over and over and over until we become desensitized. And we begin to ignore it. It doesn't bother us anymore. And then who knows, a lot of people start to believe those lies because we hear them over and over and over again. Oh, we hear this, truthful hyperbole. Why do people believe this? Well, be honest with you, it's sort of a marketing scheme. You turn on QVC, you turn on Home Shopping Network. What are they saying? This thing is the best you've ever seen. Look how juicy this meat is. Look at how much whiter your teeth are. It's the best there ever was. Well, that's stretching and exaggerating a little bit. But basically, this is an oxymoron. Truthful hyperbole. Hyperbole is really just a lie, isn't it? It's the biggest, it's the best, it's the greatest. Okay, but we get used to that stuff. So what do we do? Now, you saw by the secondary title of my lesson, I had four things there, and I meant to tell you that's also sort of my outline. So when we get to this point, you know I'm just getting warmed up. No, I'm just getting toward the end. What do we do about all this misinformation that we are being fed and hopefully is not impacting us or influencing our beliefs, not influencing our spirituality, our doctrine in some way? But it's out there, folks. It's out there. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to London and ridden the tube or the underground there, their subway system, but right on the platform before you get onto the car, they have written all over in good proper British English, mind the gap. Here in America, we would say, just watch out or be careful, something like that. But that's mind the gap. And if you see in this illustration, there is about a 4-inch gap there between the platform and stepping onto the car. not a big chasm that you have to leap across, that you're going to fall into, but certainly almost insignificant, but something that could trip you up and cause you to fall and could cause perhaps serious injury. And that's what we have to do with our spiritual beliefs and the things that we are being taught or that we are being told or that we hear or that we read about. We have to mind that gap between what is fact and what is fiction. Somewhere in there, we have to test the spirits. Otherwise, we're going to be tripped up. Now, there are several gaps I will allude to here. First of all, there is a knowledge gap. What did Paul tell the Ephesians? That they had been told these things, and they will come, and they are giving them to them, providing it to them, to equip the saints. Why? So we will be smarter. Or in this case, they will be smarter. That they would no longer be naive as children. That anybody could come to them, whatever whims and whatever doctrines or whatever, they could be tossed to and fro and they'd believe them. But no, they'd be smarter. That they could check this out and know when they were going to be tricked. Know who was using those cunning words to deceive them. So there's a knowledge gap there that we need to make sure that we don't fall into. Paul told Timothy to study to show thyself approved unto God. Now, I know that translation, study, we think of study as being in the books. The proper translation would be to be diligent. Well, kind of means the same thing. We have to put our nose to things and stay with things. We have to read. We have to increase our knowledge so that we don't fall into that gap. And then, of course, Paul teaches in 1 Corinthians about some were given to be apostles, some were given to be teachers, those sort of things. But they were providing the wisdom of the Holy Spirit to them. And we have the wisdom of the Holy Spirit in God's Word, the Bible. That is our gold standard to test things against, to fill that lack of knowledge, that knowledge gap. Sometimes we just go through life oblivious to what's around us. There is an awareness gap. And we've been warned since the Old Testament times about there are evil people out there. You need to have that situational awareness. You need to have your antenna up and watch out for them. The awareness gap means to be aware and beware of these folks. Paul told Timothy, the time's coming. Oh, it was already there. But it didn't stop. It's going to continue. The time's coming where people will not endure sound doctrine. Now, they're going to deviate for whatever reasons, for their own evil reasons, or their own egos, or their own profit, whether that be wealth or whether it be for prestige. They're not going to adhere to sound doctrine. Jude says there's going to be ungodly men who turn the grace of our God into lewdness. Not just something sexual, but something obscene, something that doesn't look anything at all what we've been taught about. And as Paul wrote again to the Corinthians, that Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. So it can be hard to pick them out sometimes. That's where we have to have the knowledge and we have to be aware so that we can identify them. And Peter said, there will be false teachers amongst you. So they're out there. And we can't just be complacent, going through life, ignoring everything. I don't say be paranoid, but we need to be aware. There is a discernment gap, and I'm sure that a lot of you can understand this. By discernment gap, what I mean is there's a little bit of a gap in our judgment. We allow ourselves to be taken in just a little bit. Here's some of the thoughts here. Oh, maybe that person, maybe they're not so bad. They really seem genuine. Well, what did Christ talk about? He said, there's going to be some false prophets, so you better look out for them. They'll come to you disguised, they'll be in sheep's clothing, but underneath they're a wolf, and they will tear you apart. And he also said, take heed that no one deceives you. So be careful. Don't take everything just because they seem genuine, or it sounds like the truth. Or, you know, there's something that 153, I'm convinced of that, that you haven't researched and you're being taken in by it. Well, a lot of what they are saying is true, so maybe I got the wrong idea. Maybe I'm the one who's wrong. We have a modern term for this sort of thing. It's called gaslighting. You know, when I'm the problem, but I'm going to convince you that this whole issue was caused because of your inability or something you did wrong, or you made me do it, and pretty soon you start thinking, well, yeah, maybe I am the one at fault. I'm the guilty party here. No, it doesn't work like that. If they're wrong, they're wrong, and you need to be firm in your convictions. You need to be knowledgeable to be able to stand up. So what he told them, you must continue in the things which you have learned. Don't backtrack on it, but stay the course. Paul told the Galatians, stand fast in the liberty which Christ has given you. Don't be swayed by these things. Be firm. Take a position and stay there. Okay, here's another one. There is no way this person is a false teacher. They have a very spiritual demeanor. What did Christ say? He told them, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, is going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. They go, haven't we cast out demons in your name? Look at all these good things we're doing. Haven't we healed people? We've done all these. But you know what? They haven't done the will of the Lord. So don't be taken in by these folks. They do things, as Christ talked about, he said, they're hypocrites. They're doing it just so people can look at them. They pray out in public. They give their alms in public so everybody can look at them. They can be seen by everybody, and they can say, oh, what a holy man they are. Or this man has a very spiritual demeanor, doesn't he? So I need to follow him. Don't be fooled by that. Use better judgment. Now, here's another one that pulls a lot of folks in. My friend really likes this teacher. Remember a few years ago, somebody, I don't know if it's still here, the Jubilee Church, have you heard that, the one in Nashville? They said, I really like going there. Their band rocks. Can you tell me anything else? They have a really good band. You'd really like it. I have a lot of fun there. Couldn't give me anything about their doctrine or anything else, but sure like the music. So, yeah, that's what we need to know, right? That we really like this atmosphere. But you know what? I haven't checked out the doctrine. Or I don't go there because even though their doctrine is true, it's not exciting enough for me, right? Paul tells us, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed, right? And again, he tells them to stand fast. Don't be swayed by these folks. Okay, and lastly, we have knowledge gap, we have a judgment gap, we have an awareness gap. We can't sit idly by. Sometimes there's an action gap. And as I said at the beginning, John tells us, test the spirits. Don't just let it soak in. Don't just listen to it. You got to put forth some energy. You've got to test those spirits to see if they're from God. Test what they're saying. Is that in the Bible, or are they just making this up? Thessalonians, Paul tells us, test all things. And when you test them, you know if they're no good, discard them and hold fast to what is true and what is righteous and what is good. What did he say about the, or what did Luke say about the Bereans there? In Acts, that they searched the scriptures daily. They put forth that effort to find out if these things connected to the scriptures, if they were truthful, not. Now in Romans, Paul writes, and this pretty much is a good summary of everything I've told you. Now I urge you, brethren, note those who cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For those are such who do not serve our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, by smooth words and flattering speech. They deceive the hearts of the people. So you're aware, you note those folks. Those things which you learn, there's that knowledge gap. Avoid them, there's that action right there. And identifying those smooth words and flattering speech. So there's that discernment there. I'm not going to be taken in by those sort of things. Okay, let me back up just. I just put this together. A lot of us, and I called this the spectrum. If you have a group of people who are unlearned, I don't mean for ignorant to sound demeaning, but I can use the term unlearned. And you've got the spectrum, and you know, usually like everything else, there's a big bell curve where everybody pretty much fits in the middle, and we're happy with that. You know, we can go through life and we can be unlearned in a lot of things. Unfortunately, you get the extremes. You get the radicals. And I call them the compliers and the deniers, the ones on the extreme. They take it to such a degree, one, they're going to go along with everything. They believe it all, and they are militant almost about it, in their speech or in their actions. On the other hand, you got the folks who everything is a hoax. That's a government plot. That's a conspiracy. I don't believe it. Mm-mm. That's the danger of being unlearned. You hear something, you should be checking it out to make sure that it's scriptural. Now, I've got one more thing here, but I want to illustrate this point on how sometimes things go on, and we've been told things for a number of years. Pretty soon, it becomes believable, or it becomes amusing. And I mentioned that in a few days, our new full-time minister is going to be here, Phil Collins. And I believe I recall he's going to be here on Wednesday, the 6th. Well, January 6th, in a lot of cultures, is something that's referred to, not just cultures, but religions, referred to as Epiphany. It's referred to as the 12th night, and it's referred to as Three Kings Day. And, you know, this has gone on for a number of years. I know in certain states in Germany, it's an actual state holiday. But, and the kids will come around. It's very cute. It really is. The kids will come around to the doors, and they'll be dressed up as the three kings, and they'll knock on the door, and they'll be spouting some poem or some song in German, which you can't understand. But basically what they're doing is they're taking up collections for a local charity. And if you give them a local charity, they will, it's called chalking the doors, they will chalk the top of your door. And it's not uncommon to see this throughout Germany and some other parts of Europe. And they will write the date and the initials CMB, and that was the name of the three kings, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. Well, let's start peeling this back a little bit. First of all, the date, January 6th, it all depends on that date of December 25th, the birthday of Jesus, to be factual. Well, we know most theologians and historians can refute Jesus probably was not born, well, not on December 25th anyway, that exact date, but he's probably not even born in December. It's probably more like the springtime from what I've read. So if we march 12 days out from a fictitious date, then that January 6th, that's also a wrong date. You can see where this is going now. Caspar, Melchior, Balthazar, I don't know where they got those names. I would have come out with John, David, and Rob or something like that. But we don't know what their names are. It's certainly not in the Bible. Well, here's the other thing. If you read the Bible, we don't know how many kings there were. It doesn't say there were three kings. Oh, we assume there were three kings or three magi because they gave gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So we assume that each one gave them a gift. Maybe there were only two of them. And, well, they talk in the plural, so there might have been two, and one gave two gifts, and the other was a little stingy and gave one. I don't know. But there weren't three kings. But still, we have these big celebrations. We have these holidays. We sing songs about it, We Three Kings, and the version I learned had something to do with an exploding cigar or something like that. Longfellow even wrote a poem about it. Shakespeare titled one of his comedies, The Twelfth Night, right? The thing is, it's all a fallacy. But so many people buy the stuff, and they put a lot of stock into it. Don't let the gaps in your knowledge or your spiritual readiness or apathy cause you to fall prey to outrageous or seemingly innocent manipulation of truth. It's not just 153, it's a whole litany of other beliefs and other dogma that is pushed out there. And if you remember that show from the 90s, The X-Files, what was their tagline? The truth is out there. Now, I probably shouldn't be using a slide from a show that had to do with conspiracy theories and paranormal and all that, but you get my point. The truth is out there. Where is our truth? We have to go to the gold standard. It's the Bible. Sanctify them by your truth. These are the words of Jesus. Your word is truth. So that's what we have to believe, and not the words of men. If there's anything we can do for you, if you have any question or need help in any way, have some questions about your salvation, please let us know. You can see us afterwards, or you can come forward while we stand and while we sing.